The Queen's Captain, written by Peter Watt and read by Rupert Degas. The wounded boy would not stop screaming for his mother. Captain Ian Steele had so often heard that primeval cry. From the battlefields of the Crimean Peninsula almost a decade earlier, through the campaigns of Persia and India, young men desperate for unobtainable salvation all sounded the same. He lay on his stomach in the dirt of a flat space, little bigger than a tennis court, with other red-coated soldiers, all gripping their Enfield rifled muskets as they awaited the next wave of rebellious Pashtun warriors to scramble up the slope, shouting Allahu Akbar in their jihad against the force of 6,000 British troops on their tribal lands. These sounds and smells were so familiar in Ian's life. The sickly sweet stench of decomposing human flesh, the constant itch caused by microscopic lice and the stink of human waste were ever present. Thirst and hunger were constant for the men isolated high amongst the rocks of the slope. The plan had been simple. Following the quelling of the Indian mutiny, many soldiers had fled and joined the rebel tribesmen of the mountains to the north. The British administration in India chose to destroy the rebellious tribesmen, who they referred to as Hindustani fanatics, and a force of 6,000 battle-hardened troops, consisting of Gurkhas and red-coated English soldiers, made up a column that was to quickly enter two mountain passes, the Umbela and Chamla, and then push the rebel tribesmen onto a British force waiting at the Indus. But things had gone wrong from the start. The logistics train had not kept up with the advancing troops, and the rocky ground had taken its toll on the men and animals moving into the high passes. They were not aware that a well-armed force of 15,000 Pashtun tribesmen was waiting for them, and instead of withdrawing, the commanding general decided to set up a defensive position either side of the Umbela Pass. Ian Steele was known to his companions as Samuel Forbes, the identity of the British aristocrat he had swapped roles with so long ago. Ian was now in his late 30s and had not lost the hardness of his body forged by his early years as a blacksmith. He was not classically handsome, but did have the face of a man women could trust with its combination of gentleness and strength. A pact between the young colonial blacksmith and English aristocrat had realized Ian's dreams of serving the Queen as a commissioned officer, leading a company of infantry. But now, as he had often thought, his youthful dreams had been long shattered by the realities of war. His only consolation was that he was very good at leading men in combat, and his luck had held, despite the scars he bore of wounds from battles fought over the years in Queen Victoria's army.